Welcome, gamer guys and gals, to the 166th episode of the Nerd Extravaganza podcast, where we're never above a shameless plug. And speaking of shameless plugs, we encourage you to head over to iTunes, where it's not too late to leave us a 5-star rating and favorable comment to be entered into our Doctor Who Star Trek memorabilia sweepstakes, where some of our lucky listeners will be the recipients of some pretty amazing autographed photos and memorabilia. Just make sure to leave your social media handle or email in the comment so we can contact you if you've won. With that corporate chilling out of the way, I'm Cam.
I'm Brian.
And I'm Chris.
Unfortunately, our fearless leader Tom is currently on a plane back from the West Coast, so I will very inadequately attempt to guide you through this week's episode, where we will regale you with stories of our favorite gaming convention, Gen Con, its humble beginnings, where it's at now, and we'll also give you our Christmas list of the games we hope will be released soon after the convention. But first, we'll go back in time and conjure for you our past tomfoolery in our weekly Geekly, Geekly Weekly updates. Brian, why don't you kick us off with what you've been doing for the past week or so?
I have not been doing very much. The usual tabletop gaming at the Adventure Game Store has become the highlight of my week lately. I did decide, however, just yesterday before the show to... This is so silly. I knocked off one of those weird bucket list items that's just been there forever, for probably, I mean, literally 30 years. I watched Time Bandits.
Nice.
For the first time ever.
That's a great movie.
Classic. I have no idea how I missed that. Every person I've ever met has seen that movie.
Is Peter Warwick in that movie? I can't remember. The guy who played Willow, the little person?
I don't think so. R2 is, but not Willow.
Okay.
And I know, like, this is totally wrong of me or whatever, but I did keep looking for Tyrion, so.
Oh, for Dinklage?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's not in that, though, is he?
I think he's too young for that. Or
yeah.
I don't even think he was born then.
Yeah.
I could be wrong.
I don't think he was working.
Yeah, I think he came out, like, in 81 or 82, something like that.
But that was really, like, that was a very cute movie, and I am just disappointed it took me so long to catch that.
Very early Sean Connery was in that. I mean, it's
I couldn't believe that.
Jeremy Irons.
It's pretty underrated. Like, it's not one of the movies you hear about when you think of, like, you know, 80s classics or whatever, but it definitely was.
And it was pretty good, because some movies, like, the last time I watched The Last Starfighter, I kind of couldn't get through it. It was kind of...
dated.
Yeah. But this, I mean, maybe just because I saw it for the first time, but it was pretty good.
Cool.
So, and that with the new eyes looking at it, you'd have to say that the special effects kind of hold up to some degree.
Yeah. Well, I think they were all practical, right?
Pretty much.
That might be it.
Yeah, very very puppety.
Puppety, physical, yeah. Costuming.
Absolutely. What else were you up to?
This isn't necessarily something I was up to, but I did see this online, and I just love these things. They are so deliciously creepy. Grimaggio was the Monster Girl card game that you kind of like Indiegogo'd with me, right?
Grimaggia, I believe.
Grimaggia, yeah. You're right. I was never really into Monster Girls before that, but it's kind of neat. Like, I like the artwork, so I was like, wow, let me take a look at this. And then I started like delving deeper into Monster Girls. There is a huge demand for just sexy Monster Girl things. And I saw one that just takes the cake. I saw a 21-foot long, quote-unquote, love pillow of a Lamia.
Oh, boy.
So, it's
21 feet long. I mean, what the hell are you going to put that thing?
She has a long, snake-like body that she would, of course, wrap around you when you sleep. So,
oh my God.
You curl yourself up 3 or 4 times in the pillow and then go to sleep. And it is terrifying.
I'd feel like I would, like, in the middle of the night, I wake up and think I was getting choked out by a python or something.
I think that's the attraction.
God.
God. The normal pillows are hundreds of dollars. I am terrified to learn how much this one would be. And unfortunately, being what I affectionately term a rape pillow, it's not a link I can share in the notes.
I'm sure our listeners are adept at Google searching, so shouldn't be too big of a deal.
Lamia love
pillow. So rewind, those pillows are hundreds of dollars?
They're very expensive. Like a normal Why? Like bed pillow cover is like $100.
Wow. Yeah, it's just a print on a pillow that's like a, you know, a body pillow.
But it's anime and it's monster girls.
Let's be honest. What else are they going to spend their money on?
Yeah, exactly.
They're saving a lot of money on dates, so.
Yeah, I was going to say, they're saving a lot of money on dinner and movies.
And after that, like, I purposely bleached my mind for the rest of the week, so.
I don't blame you. All right, let's throw it over to Chris. Chris, what you been up to?
So what I've been up to is I took the Prince and Play reward from the Epic Card Game Kickstarter, and I've been playing with my kid. He grew up on Yu-Gi-Oh, Pokemon, and Magic, so he's been kicking my butt pretty squarely. But I've been enjoying the game. Luckily, we've been playing it and slowly piecing together what rules we either accidentally skipped over or didn't read right or piecing things together. And it seems to be a pretty solid game. And I think it does what it says on the tin, which is it lets you basically feel like you're in the middle of a Magic card game without all the long build-up. And even better yet, you didn't have to spend hundreds of dollars to get the right cards to start kicking ass.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to getting my copy of that when it comes. I mean, I guess I could pull the print and play, but I'm just too lazy for that, I think.
Well, I'm thinking of printing up another copy so I can start having a four-player game.
Okay. Well, I might jump in on one of these days.
On top of that, I also caught up with the rest of the AMC's Human series, which, just to recap, it's an alternate reality where basically we now have androids. What's the world kind of coming to with androids that we're replacing everybody here and there for their jobs? It's based off a Swedish show which was called, I think, Real Humans or Two Humans, one of the two. And I'm really enjoying it. Turns, it's very thoughtful and it's also very creepy. And I think it really kind of, you know, puts you in that space of thinking seriously. Because at some point, I feel like a lot of science fiction is a dry, and not necessarily that it's prescient, but it's a dry test run for us to consider some ideas for things before they actually arrive.
Cool.
The other thing is, you know, recently you guys been hearing me talk, and I haven't really been doing much with my Geeku Weekly. And the reason for that is I am finally wrapping up my next Zombie Bloom series short story, which will be on Amazon very soon, called Growing Bloom. And it continues the adventures of my kick-ass zombie protagonist, Amy Bloom. And personal best, woohoo! I now have about 4 or 5 stars on 4 or 5 products.
Very nice.
So, you know, thanks to my fans that are out there. Greatly appreciate it. My link will be down in the podcast links after the show.
Very cool. Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
Does that wrap up your weekly update?
Oh, yes, it does.
All right. I guess that brings that over to me. I will not date myself and tell you which year reunion it was, but I had my high school reunion, a high school reunion this past weekend, which was a little bit fun, but mostly depressing, just seeing people after, you know, several years and, you know, just having your perceptions of who they were back then in high school and what they are now. You know, someone actually brought up a really great point. The advent of Facebook really sort of has done away with the need for high school reunions. I mean, I know pretty much what everyone that was there has been doing for the past, you know, however many years. So there really wasn't much to, like, you know, to update on in terms of like their life when I saw them. It was funny in terms of like, it's always funny when, you know, either you meet someone that you don't know from online and you know, getting the actual how they are in person, but you know, sort of the same effect. Seeing people after many years, you know, and your perception of them through their Facebook page or whatever, then sort of meeting up with reality and it not gelling very well. So that was sort of a surreal experience, but I had a good time overall, I'd say. Been doing a lot of tabletop gaming as well. Brian, I would agree that our weekly Tuesday, Thursday, Sunday adventure game store board gaming nights have been the highlights of my week. Over the past few weeks, mentioned getting in a couple games from Kickstarter last week, Biblios Dice being one of them, another one of them being Sovereignty of Dust. We played those over the last couple weeks. Brian, you and I both played those games, and I know I loved Biblios Dice. The setup was just atrocious. I mean, it took probably 20 minutes, 30 minutes to set up the game, but I think the gameplay was actually pretty awesome. Sovereignty of Dust, of course, I loved because, you know, my name is on the box and and one of the cards. I you know, kickstarted a developer credit on that game. So, you know, I was being a little bit facetious, but I did think it was a pretty cool game. And I really liked the art and the sort of the theme of it. You know, I'm always a sucker for post-apocalyptic future type themes. And so I had a good time playing those games. What'd you think?
I actually really liked both of those. I think Biblio's Dice is actually kind of like easy to like. That'll probably do very well. The setup I'm hoping was a first time jitters, but Sovereignty of Dust was just like a kind of a me game. That was really fun. I like that style. The art was like 80% there. I kind of like that. It was a little tiny bit rough, but I really liked the style it was in. And I love the narrative in my mind, the guys like walking through broken buildings and does the building collapse or does he find a treasure trove of weapons? And that was totally cool.
Yeah, I really liked that game. And you know, and hey, like I said, it's the Kickstarter version. So maybe if they do a retail version, they, you know, they'll clean up a little bit. So aside from that, you know, I've been doing a lot of reading. I just picked up Neil Asher's book. It's called Dark Intelligence, Transformation Book 1. So far, that's pretty cool. I've been alternating between that and a book called How to Succeed in Evil by Patrick McLean, which I'm really enjoying. It's like sort of an evil genius becomes an quote-unquote evil consultant, and he's sort of counseling these different criminal masterminds on how they can maximize their evilness and you know, get the best return on investment, if you will. It's pretty cool. It's a lot of spoofy, you know, satirical takes on the superhero genre and tropes and stuff like that. But I'm really enjoying that book. And gearing up for Gen Con, which I will be going to in the next week or so, and happens to be the topic of this episode. But before we get into that topic, let's start our news extravaganza, and we'll stay true to form and order. Brian, what do you got in the news?
I don't necessarily like people announcing that they're going to have news, but this time I'll make a exception to that. NASA has announced tomorrow, I believe, a very important news conference, and a lot of people are pretty excited about it. It is part of the Kepler mission, and SETI is involved, which that's not crazy rare. Like, SETI is usually involved in their press conferences, but they may be announcing like that they've actually discovered either, I mean, alien life. That doesn't necessarily mean like, you know, a guy with a ray gun who talks to us, or a habitable planet. Like, it's something we could possibly reach within our lifetimes.
I think it would be hilarious if they did announce that they found extraterrestrial life, because I think Hawking just committed like $100 million to find extraterrestrial like life. So that would cut his knees out from under him. And I'm not being insensitive when I say that.
But either way, I'm pretty excited to see what the news is. I'm sure it's something pretty exciting.
Yeah, I can't remember the last time NASA went out of its way to make that big of a deal out of a press conference, you know? So that it must be something big.
Hopefully it's not like Discovery 2 or something stupid.
Guess we'll just have to wait and see. What else you got?
Speaking of space, Kickstarter finally being put towards something I approve of. The Smithsonian Institution is kickstarting the restoration project for the spacesuit Neil Armstrong wore into space. It's one of those things, being on display and being exposed to light is deteriorating the national treasure. So I think $500,000 to restore it and put it back on display for people to see. And jeez. I think that's, I mean, it's a lot of money, but I think that's a worthy cause. That's something that people should have access to.
That's the one at the Air and Space Museum in D.C.?
I believe so.
Is that where it is? Yeah, that's definitely something we need to preserve. Very cool.
Very pleased to say, like, it really looks strong. I think they had, like, $360,000 raised already, so it's not something that's a great cause that people are just ignoring.
Awesome.
Woohoo! And to wrap up a slightly different topic. We'll move from aliens to robots. Roboticist at the Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute in New York have built three robots that have passed, like, our self-awareness test.
You're talking about the AI has passed the self-awareness test?
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, I guess they're robots that actually, like, embody the AI.
Interesting.
Puzzles are, I mean, they're answering CAPTCHA like crazy. So if it's not aliens being announced, it's robot overlords being announced.
Somebody's going to take us over.
And we embrace these overlords, whoever they may be. Please don't put me in a little cage.
Reminds me of Ex Machina, the movie that recently came out that I just saw that a week or two ago. There's a name for that test, the test that they give them, the Turing test?
It used to be the Turing test, but they've yeah. revamped that one since then.
Oh, so it's not the Turing test anymore, it's something else?
Yeah. I can't remember what the name of it is, but yeah, I only learned about that about a month or two ago. It was like, oh, the Turing test doesn't work anymore? Oh.
Interesting.
I feel like a major dick doing this, but I'll do it just in this one case. It's Turing. And I don't really care to, like, correct you or anything like that, but he is such a fucking important figure. I want you to get his name right.
Oh, I'm not offended.
Alan Turing.
Yeah.
You are correct, and I am not offended to be corrected.
I don't want to be like, it's pronounced nuclear or anything like that, but that guy deserves it.
All right. Anything else?
That's it.
Very cool. What about you, Chris? What you got on the news front?
I got a smattering of this and a smattering of that. In case you guys aren't aware of it, there is a survival game called Rust. And what they have done is they take your avatar and attach it to your Steam ID. So once your avatar is finalized, you can't ever change it. And why this is important is because it randomly assigns your look, your race, and your gender when you start the game.
Okay.
So a lot of people are having issues with this, believe it or not. I don't want to play a black woman. I'm not a black woman. What? That's why there's a little bit of news about that, because some people are having severe issues playing a random character versus something they get to tweak to look like them or whoever they want it to look like.
Of course they are. Okay.
No, nothing about race or gender in there. No, not at all. Also, there is a DLC coming out for the indie game Never Alone. I've been keeping my eye on it. I actually need to get around to buying it and playing it. Because it has some decent reviews. Never Alone was published in partnership with an Alaskan Native tribe and focuses on a game that talks about their myths and stories. So it's a little bit of education, a little bit of culture, and a little bit of gaming all rolled into one. And it's kind of nice to see, you know, those sort of things being respected. A perfect example of that is, you know, there was a lot of noise back in the day about Avatar because a lot of the actors weren't cast as their characters were in the TV show. They were pretty much whitewashed.
Okay.
So running from that, I'm going to go to the bizarre one here. At this moment, if your neighbor flies his drone into your backyard and you're not thrilled about it and you decide to shoot it down or whack it with a stick, it is a federal crime. Because at this time, drones are seen as aircraft.
Wow. Okay.
So you could do some hard time and pay a lot of fines for shooting your neighbor's drone, especially the one that, you know, the teenager put up to kind of look into your window. So before you go ballistic on it, pun intended, think about it for a moment.
All right.
Hey, have you guys heard of Deep Dream yet?
No.
Or Google Dream?
No, I have not.
So what it is the algorithms that are used in Google's image search are starting to get, they actually call it a neural network. And they've decided to kind of feed it, and they literally have to train it to notice things. And what they've done is they decided to tell it to crank up and look for images in what's basically kind of white noise, and it creates these really psychedelic images that are just bizarre. Like, out of pure sky, it comes up with pagodas and fish and dogs, and all of it looks like it's really trippy. And probably one of the best examples is it shows a scene from Fear and Loathing where Johnny Depp's character is high, and they've run it through Deep Dream, and it's pretty weird looking. A lot of dogs popping out of nowhere. The X-Files, as you know, is going back to Fox. And the Lone Gunmen are coming back with it, evidently. So they are definitely trying to hit all the triggers. I can't remember. Didn't the Lone Gunmen get shot? Or some of them did? Didn't they die?
I don't remember.
We're going to have to all turn on our geek cards if we can't answer that, man.
That was a long time ago. I watched that series religiously, but I haven't seen it in probably 15 years.
More than that, right?
Yeah.
And then on a little more of a personal note, there is a comic book I really like called Atomic Robo, which is just this wonderful mishmash of pulpy stuff. Basically, Atomic Robo is an intelligent robot that was designed by Tesla, and his arch enemy is the Ghost of Edison. And he has crazy wild science adventures all the way from the 1930s up to the modern time, battling Nazi brain robots in the whole nine yards. He has one of the most entertaining and amusing villains, Dr. Dinosaur, who is, you know, oh, I come from the past when there was intelligent dinosaurs. And Atomic Robo is like, then why are you even speaking English? Wouldn't you be speaking dinosaurese?
Right.
No, that's not true. You know, you're probably an escaped experiment from somebody's genetics lab. That's not true. Stop that, you mammalian. I'm a robot. I'm not even a mammal. I'm not even, you know, their back and forth is just always amusing me. And it has switched over to being a full-on webcomic. So if you haven't seen it before, haven't been down to the comic shop, now thanks to the link that's going to be in our podcast, you can catch up with 10 graphic novels worth of crazy awesome adventure science tales. And if you join their Patreon page for $5-$10, then you'll be able to get some nifty stuff and get some sneak peeks as they start to put out the 11th one purely digitally from here on out.
Very cool. Sounds like something our listeners, I'm sure, would be interested in. Anything else, Chris?
No, I'm good.
All right, then I guess that heads it on back to me for my news extravaganza offerings. I'll keep it short and sweet this week. Just a few things I thought were kind of funny in the news. Panasonic, known for making TVs and washing machines, cameras, bicycles, all that good stuff, has come out through one of their subsidiaries called ActiveLink with a actual honest-to-God exoskeleton suit that they're outfitting their warehouse workers with, so that warehouse workers can be more effective and lift things that are a lot heavier than they otherwise normally would and make their work more efficient. So they've got this assistive they're calling it an assistive robotics rig or exosuit. You know, it's sort of, if you look at the pictures, it's sort of akin to the power loader that Ripley had in Aliens. And it's pretty good. It's pretty cool. You sort of get into it and you can just walk around and do a bunch of really cool shit with it. Although I don't know like how effective it is. It says that a person wearing the suit would be able to lift up to 33 more pounds than they normally would be able to while exerting minimal effort. I don't know what that translates into. If that's like a multiple of like, you know, if you were exerting maximum effort, is it still going to be 33 pounds over that? Or is there some sort of multiple to that? But like, 33 pounds doesn't seem like a whole hell of a lot of an increase to, like, you know, be wearing this big bulky exosuit, right? I mean, maybe if you said 300 pounds or something like that, I'd be a little more impressed, but 33 pounds sort of falls a little flat for me. It's a step in the right direction, I guess. Pretty soon we'll all be wearing crazy exosuits, I hope. Just like, what was it, 20, 30 years ago, they told us we'd all be having breakfast on the moon. Let's see, AshleyMadison.com. You guys heard about this website?
Yes, I did.
Apparently, it is a website for cheaters. I only knew about this website because of, you know, I heard it from other people. And I'm just kidding. I used to listen to the Howard Stern show a lot. And he was like a huge advertiser of this. They were a huge advertiser on his show. And it's a show. I mean, it's a website where you can go on to in order to cheat, basically. It's a website for cheaters. If you want to step out on your wife or husband or, you know, significant other, boyfriend, girlfriend, whatever, you go on this website and find other like-minded individuals to meet and have discreet, you know, liaisons with. And apparently hackers got into the site, got all the data, and are now publishing the names, identities, and all the freaky shit that these people were into. Apparently, the first guy to be identified in connection with the hack is a Massachusetts man. It, you know, the odds were 37 million to one, because I guess there were 37 million users on the site, that he would be picked, but I guess he got chosen, and all of his personal info and all of his profile info and all the weird, you know, stuff he was into was published on the web, and that guy is probably hiding under a rock somewhere now, probably from his wife. But I just thought that that was pretty funny, that the cheaters are getting their comeuppance. Benicio del Toro, what do you guys think about him as an actor?
Oh, I've always appreciated him.
Appreciate him. Brian, you think he's thumbs up, thumbs down?
Really don't know which one he is. Like, I'm so bad with names and actors. And what did he play?
He was in Traffic. He was like the Mexican cop in Traffic. He played Fenster, I believe was his name, in The Usual Suspects. He was one of The Usual Suspects guys. He's been in a ton of movies. He's really...
He was the gambling dude at the beginning of Lock, Stock, and Smoking Barrels.
I think, yeah. I remember Mexican Cop.
Oh, Chris, you just brought it up. What was the movie? The Johnny Depp movie, Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas? He was he was Johnny Depp's lawyer in that movie.
Okay, yeah. Thumbs up.
Yeah, he is apparently going to be the villain in Star Wars Episode 8. They've tapped him to be the villain for that future endeavor. I don't know if that makes you guys nervous or happy or nondescript. What do you think about that?
God, I really, not that he won't do a great job, but I really hated how they dumped Maul after one movie. And I really wish they had, like, kept him around. So now I'm kind of, like, worried that they might be dumping another villain a little prematurely. Yeah. Some of their villains are so badass, they just deserve more than one film.
Well, I have to tell you, like, I am not sold at all on Adam Driver as Kylo Ren for Episode 7. Do you know who he is? Or have you seen the pictures anyway of who's the guy that's going to play Kylo Ren?
He's the cloaky one, right?
Yes, he's the bad guy.
He struck it big on the show, the HBO show Girls. I don't know if you've ever seen that show. I was forced to watch it by a former love interest, but... he's like just this goofy looking goon kind of guy. And, I don't know, not what I envision as a Star Wars villain, but hey, I mean, you know.
Yeah. He didn't look all that intimidating to me. What of the stills I've seen him in costume. I mean, he looks like a pissed guy, but you know, I'm kind of getting the same vibe from what's his face in Superman versus Batman.
Who, Affleck?
No. Who's playing Luther?
Oh, Jesse Eisenberg.
Yeah.
Yeah, Eisenberg's like kind of like the, you know, he'll always be like the Facebook dork to me, you know? I mean, I guess like this guy that's playing Kylo Ren, from the stills that I've seen, most of them he's wearing a mask. So maybe that's the way they're getting away with it, or maybe they added that on once the kid started acting and they were like, all right, we got to do something here. We got to slap a mask on this guy. But I guess we'll just have to wait and see until, December.
To some degree, I have a hope for that, but he was also in Guardians of the Galaxy for like a short bit, and that was it. So I just hope if they use him, they use him, fully use him and all his talent as a really kick-ass villain for more than 2 minutes in the next Star Wars.
Well, he's been in several of the Marvel movies. He's the collector in the Marvel movies, which he's done, you know, a great job with, I think. All right, moving, we'll stick with the movie theme. Back to the Future, one of my favorite movies of all time. The trilogy is headed back to theaters this October. On October 21st, the movies, the trilogy will be re-released in theaters, and also a really cool, Blu-ray combo pack will be released with a bunch of really cool features and other stuff. And, The box actually has like it's like a flux capacitor. It looks really cool. So I'm definitely going to have to pick that up. But it's funny because, you know, people aren't even believing now that it's going to be October 21st when it comes out, because that's the actual 30-year anniversary. But like, there's been so many like Photoshop memes that have gone around, you know, that saying like, oh, this is the day that, you know, Marty, whatever, went back to the future. Paramount is confirming that it's, you know, it will be October 21st, and that is the actual date. So I think we can believe them.
I wish this would catch on. I would rather just re-release the movie than do a reboot.
Yeah, exactly. I really agree. I mean, why not just re-release the movie or digitally remaster it, you know, not like Lucas style, adding all kinds of bunch of bullshit, but like, you know, digitally remaster it and then re-release it. I mean, I don't know. I don't think the dollars are there for the movie companies though. They'd rather rebrand it and, you know, try to make 100 million rather than just re-release it and make, you know, 10, 20 million. On that depressing note, let's move into our topic, which of course is Gen Con 2015. Super excited about this con, fellas. And, you know, it's obviously I'm biased because I will be heading there, but, what do you guys think? And Chris, I know you had a little bit of a backstory you wanted to give us on Gen Con. Why don't you educate us and the listeners on its humble beginnings? And then we can sort of launch into, the con itself, and then what we hope to see, you know, now and in the future.
For the longest time, Gen Con really was basically Dungeons and Dragons Con. It was the convention for the role-playing industry. I mean, we had some stuff here and there, but I mean, for years and literally decades, it really hadn't changed. When Magic came onto the scene and started being a whole new revenue stream, it kind of opened up Gen Con into being a much wider audience and market and more into board games and stuff. But that was kind of actually a start to something else. Basically Wizards of the Coast bought and took over Gen Con for a while. It was part of the deal when Hasbro bought Wizards of the Coast. And then something happened about 5-6 years ago. Basically Hasbro just sold it to Peter Atkinson, who had left Wizards of the Coast for basically the idiocy of Hasbro selling off the Dungeons & Dragons video game rights to some French video game publishers. He was like, you didn't even ask me? That was the gold mine, guys. Come on.
Right.
So he's running Gen Con. Then he actually starts running Star Wars Celebration. And basically working with George Lucas. George Lucas had some ideas of what he wanted to do and where he wanted to go with that particular event. And not all of them really jived with the realities of running a kind of basically a trade show in the real world. So at some point, those things collided, and I think George Lucas even got to the point that he was going to sue the Gen Con company, basically. And they signed up for bankruptcy, and the companies now, instead of just role-playing game companies, we've got board game companies, we've got card companies, they don't want to see Gen Con go away, because even though there's this other convention put out by the Gaming Association of Manufacturers called Origins, Gen Con is still kind of the premier place to put everything out and show it off. And, or even announce it and here you can buy it for the first time. So they all kind of helped put together and find ways to support Gen Con, you know, extra sponsorships and things like that to keep it on its feet. And between that extra promotion and everything, Gen Con has sort of ridden the wave of how these other conventions have expanded and gotten huge. And they've also taken advantage of all the other things that other conventions have, you know, embraced, like cosplay and things like that. And now Gen Con is just a beast on its own. It's like the Indianapolis version of Dragon Con, except a little more geeky.
Right.
Versus media.
No, it is. It is an amazing story. I mean, it is absolutely a behemoth. I mean, it's the largest and longest running gaming convention in the country. I think they've been doing it for like over 40, 50 years, something like that. And, it is the Super Bowl of board game shows. I'm glad that it didn't go away, you know, during those tumultuous years. Very much so the best 4 days in gaming. And, I will be leaving on Tuesday to head up to Indianapolis where it's being held. Now, Chris, is this true? And I didn't look this up. I apologize, listeners, for my non-research on this. Someone actually just told me this yesterday and, I meant to look it up, but, it just came to me when I was thinking right now. It's called Gen Con because it used to be in some small town called Geneva in like Milwaukee or Wisconsin or something like that.
Lake Geneva, because that goes all the way back to its Dungeons and Dragons roots, because that's where TSR, the first company for Dungeons and Dragons, was.
Gotcha.
In fact, there's a convention going on there now again, called GaryCon in honor of one of the two inventors of Dungeons and Dragons. That would be Gary Gygax.
Yeah,
and
of course.
Dave Arneson is the second fellow. And so that's why it's called Gen Con, is it for Lake Geneva.
Gotcha. And then they just kept it when they moved to Indianapolis.
Exactly. It just got so big it had to move to Indianapolis.
Of course. Yeah, so I will be there for the next week. I will be there sort of half and half capacity. I'll be there as a participant and, of course, you know, representative of the world-famous Nerdtravaganza podcast, but I will also be there as an employee and representative of Yellow, one of the larger game makers, tabletop game makers in the world. And I will be demoing games all week, all of their games, their new games, their older games, and helping out in other capacities. So I'm hoping to have a lot of fun doing that, but also squeeze in as much personal time as I can, checking out all the other tabletop game, makers and all the new releases and exclusives and events and stuff that they've got going on there. I mean, if you go on to the Gen Con website, I mean, it's ridiculous how many events and things that they've got going on there. You could probably, it's like the Louvre, you know, you could, if you only did one thing like for 20 seconds, it would take you like a year to get everything done. But, I'm excited and I'm looking forward to it. So of course, the big thing about Gen Con, I mean, you know, if you're a trade show person, if you're a game maker, game designer, game store owner, I mean, this is the place to be. But if you are a just game enthusiast, the big thing for you, of course, is the games. You know, what are the new games that are coming out? What's going to be demoed? What are the exclusives? So I wanted to sort of ask you guys, what games are you looking forward to that you've seen in your perusings of the internet and your, you know, the forums and, you know, Board Game Geek and all that stuff of the offerings and new releases and previews and stuff of some of the games that are going to be coming out? What are you guys most looking forward to?
Probably for me, one of the things that I've gotten a bigger exposure as far as gaming wise is Will Wheaton's Titan's Grave, Ashes of Valhalla, I think it was called, Vrakana, something like that. He put together an RPG as a 10-episode web series and the actual books so you can play in his world or along with the characters is going to premiere at Gen Con.
That's sweet. Do you know if he's going to be there or is it just drop? Is it
well,
just dropping
from what I understand, Will Wheaton is actually a regular at Gen Con.
Okay.
Like for the past 7-8 years, as well as his sometimes producing partner, Felicia Day, who's known for the Guild and also as another producer on Tabletop. So if those two gaming celebrities are on your list to meet and greet and see or go to a panel, you can probably find him there. But yeah, basically with Titan's Grave, it's going to be sold in a 2-book set. One is the generic rules that Green Ronin is putting out, a generic fantasy system called Fantasy Age. How it basically works is you're going to most of the time roll 3 6-sided dice. One of the dice is going to be oddly colored. Sometimes when you're doing cool stuff, if you get doubles, then you look at that odd-colored die, and that is a stunt die, and whatever number it rolled can be used for stunt points to pull off crazy stuff. And then the second book is actually going to be a combination of adventure plus setting book for Titan's Grave. And Titan's Grave, in case you didn't know, is going to be, it's a really crazy science fantasy setting. So you have elves with blasters and you have cybernetic lizard men and you have orcs with rifles and battle axes. So I figure between the two, I pretty much have anything I want to throw any crazy thing together at the last minute if I want to do that.
Very cool. Any tabletop games you're looking forward to?
I am looking forward to, I guess you technically call it a tabletop game. I'm looking for the next wave of stuff from X-Wing. And I'm also looking if I, you know, it's actually coming out or it's already been out, but I want to try out the new Games Workshop fantasy game called Age of Sigmar, which is a totally different beast than what the game has been in the past. The game used to be very Napoleonic. You put models together to form units that kind of march and file and rank, and they have to wheel their formations around on the board. And now it's much more of a crazy skirmish game. You don't even have points for your armies. You just put models down back and forth until someone cries uncle. And then you kind of play the game from there. If one person is outnumbered, then he gets a crazy sort of special underdog objective. And if he pulls off, he wins. You can play almost anything in the game from the past versions up to now. But if you have an older model, basically they have weird rules. I don't know how people are going to take it. I think they're definitely trying to give you the vibe that you should be embracing the game as more beer and pretzels than serious competitive play. Like if you're playing an old elf on a dragon, you have to act like you're haughty. You can't smile. You've got to point and be kind of a douchebag to keep your bonuses. Or if you're playing some crazy fantasy chaos race, you have to kind of dance at the table when you roll your dice to get your bonuses. Crazy stuff like that.
Very cool. That sounds pretty awesome. Anything else you're looking forward to before I throw it over to Brian?
A couple other things. There's a thing called Operation Faust.
Yeah, I was looking at that too. That looks pretty cool.
Yeah, it says it's a coup game without player elimination. So that'll be interesting because, you know, I like my bluffing and deduction games. As evidently, that's what the genre is now officially called.
Yeah.
For coup, werewolf, resistance. What else am I missing that we play?
Avalon, all that, yeah, all that good stuff.
All that stuff that gets at least played once or twice on our Thursday game nights.
Good cop, bad cop.
Good cop, bad cop now.
One of our former guests, yeah.
Got to give them props. Yeah, that's a fun game too. I like that one.
Yeah, it is a good game.
I don't talk about it as much, but I'm really pretty hardcore tabletop gamer. So I guess the other things is I have two war games I'm really into. One's called Alpha Strike, which is basically giant robots. It's based off of the old Battletech universe. I'm looking for some announcements there. I have been told there may be something crazy going on, but I don't think I'm at liberty to say. So I want to see if I can actually, you know, go woot, do a fist bump in the air if the announcements are made at Gen Con. If not, I can't say anything.
Well, you can tell me offline, so, you know, I can be ready when I'm there.
And then Frostgrave, which is basically, I don't know if you guys ever played Mordenheim, but it was an old squad-based war game where you played a group of bounty hunters rifling through a deserted fantasy-ruined town to look for magic items and stuff. Mm. That was Games Workshop again, and basically, Frostgrave is someone's redo of that with the serial numbers filed off so we could actually play that game. Because a lot of those old games from Games Workshop have been literally shut down. They don't even sell anything for them anymore. And if you can't find it on eBay, it doesn't exist.
Wow.
And I guess the only thing is I also hear there's an official Gen Con beer almost every year now. And the one that's this year is called the Drink On and Prosper Ale, and I would just love to have that on my wall. Never mind, drink a pint of it.
Well, if I can find a bottle or a can of it for you, I'll try to grab one and bring it back.
There you go. But you know, I want to drink it American style. I want to drink it cold.
Well, I mean, you can put it in the fridge when I bring it back.
There you go. Yeah. Exactly. And I think that, you know, and I know I'm saying that, and I know, like, in the next couple of days, as things start rolling in for Gen Con, and the episode's in the air, that I'm going to be like, oh, I forgot that, and I forgot that, and I forgot that. Especially in the role-playing side, because it just, especially for role-playing games, it seems like they're almost as bad as video game now when it comes to, like, the stuff that's out there and going back and forth. It just, it's wonderful that we have an embarrassment of riches, but it's hard to keep up with it, especially with your wallet.
Oh, for sure. There's a ton of material out there. That rounds out your Christmas in July wish list.
Yes, it does.
What about you, Brian? What are you looking forward to?
Chris covered a lot of it. I mean, I was definitely looking forward to some of the Age of Sigmar stuff. I will probably never play that game, but I love how it's unfolding and how upset people are that, you know, you can do a war cry at the table and get a bonus to your die or something like that. I'm also, just for me, conventions are a little bit different. Like, I don't usually go in with an agenda. I don't really go in to see A, B, C. I just go in to see what's happening. So I'm really excited of just catching the news and seeing, you know, like what kind of smaller, cooler stuff came up. We were joking about this earlier, this board game, La Granja.
Yeah.
I really don't care about that, but there's this cheesy restaurant in our area called La Granja, and yep. I just love that they're getting their own game. So I don't know anything about the game, but it still excites me.
Yeah, I doubt it's in any way related to black beans and rice and rotisserie chicken, yeah. Which is the La Granja, but it is funny that that's the name.
The things that really excite me are the exclusives. There's a exclusive alternate sculpt figure for, I don't even know. I don't play this army. It's a hordes minion for War Machine / hordes, but it's just, you know, you're going to be able to get it like once a year, and then it's going to be like cool, and it looks pretty cool. It's like, instead of being an alligator, it's a woman in an alligator costume. It looks like almost like they released a cosplay figure of their figure. I dig that a lot. That's by Privateer Press. And I was just reading a moment ago, some other companies are doing, I mean, not exclusive games, but their games are going to be there first, and they're going to sell out for sure. So if you want it for the next 6 months, you'll have to get it there.
Yeah, I mean, that was the thing back in the day at Gen Con was, you know, you could pre-order or, you know, get advanced copies of certain games that weren't going to be released until, you know, 5-6 months later. That was like sort of Gen Con's thing. Now of days, it's all of the exclusive Gen Con only things, you know, like the figures, like you mentioned, different promo cards. And that's really led to a pretty robust eBay market for a lot of these things. I mean, you can go on eBay right now and put in Gen Con exclusive, and you're going to get, you know, a couple thousand probably items on there. It's, you know, I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing, but, you know, it's definitely spawned its own sort of little mini economy.
I think it's terribly funny, too. I mean, I guess how else are you going to get it? I guess maybe they do provide a service, but they'll buy a $20 figure and sell it for $100 the same day.
Yeah, for sure.
Which just feels kind of wrong. Like, that feels like exploitive, especially since they can go back the next day and buy another one.
Right. And it's, you know, it's the same thing with like the Amiibos and all that stuff. It's like, you know, it's like this like artificial supply and demand. But hey, look, if there's someone out there that's selling it and there's someone out there that's willing to pay what that person is selling it for, then who are we to say that's wrong, right?
So my question about that cottage industry is it a better deal to sell it that day or a little bit after, or to sit on it for like a month later or something?
Well, they're never actually exclusive. You can always pick it up later. What was it? It was Lancelot, right? That was like, yeah, $5 this week. That was going for $100 on eBay for like a year.
Yeah, the Lancelot expansion for Avalon for years was like, you know, you wouldn't find it for under $100 somewhere.
Wow.
And I never paid that. I actually have a couple copies. I had a couple copies, but I just traded on BoardGameGeek just randomly to people, like for nothing, on pennies. I don't think people knew what they had at the time. And I'm kicking myself now for not selling it on eBay for that much. But I'm not one to sell stuff. I like to trade, but like, you know, I don't usually sell stuff. And now you can get it on BoardGameGeek for like $5. And yeah, I mean, I think Chris, to answer your question, that's, they want to get it up on eBay and sell it as quickly as they can, probably because, you know, the BoardGameGeek or the manufacturers themselves sometimes will just go ahead and just put it on their own website, or even just include it with games, you know, and be like, okay, well, if you know, for this month, if you buy a copy of the game, what we're going to include, you know, this promo or whatever. I know Plaid Hat did that with Dead of Winter. They had a promo character that everyone was clamoring for on eBay for like 40, 50, 60 bucks. And then, all of a sudden, they just announced on their website, hey, if you just buy the game, we'll give it to you for free. And that killed that market. So I think it comes down to the developer or to the publisher, and whether or not they, because I know some of them go out of their way to specifically sync the market for their promos because they don't want people getting taken advantage of on eBay.
You know, I think for a lot of those people, what their idea is if they can sell it that day or a little after, that then they're recouping the cost of actually going to Gen Con.
Yeah, and you know, whenever you put something on eBay, it's got to be more than, you know, what you paid for it, because you've got shipping costs, you've got the eBay costs, you've got PayPal costs. So I sort of get that, and I don't have a problem with someone recouping their costs and even making a few bucks on it. I only have the problem where, like, where Brian said, it's, you know, you bought it for 20 and you're selling it for 100, and it's just, you know, completely artificially inflated. But, you know, again, if someone's willing to pay that 100, then, you know, who am I to say that that's wrong?
Yeah, I mean, it is ultimately, someone will buy it. That's what it's worth.
Yeah, exactly.
And if you don't, someone else will.
Yeah, exactly. What else are you looking forward to, Brian?
I, I am really looking forward to this. I have the game because of Kickstarter, but apparently they're doing like a pretty big launch at Gen Con. I really think Viceroy is going to be great.
We got to play that, you know, tomorrow at game night, because I, you know, depending on how that goes, I may pick up a copy while I'm there.
Yeah.
And if I can score some promos, I'll definitely grab you one for sure. If they have, I don't even know if they'll have any, but you know, we'll see. Viceroy is like a very Euro game, isn't it?
Yes, it's a more simple Euro game. Like just my prejudices when I think Euro, I think like unnecessarily complicated, which isn't always fair. But this is pretty easy, but it has that whole like Euro dynamic.
Victory points and the resource management. Yeah, exactly.
And a great like Euro aesthetic.
Yeah, the art looks pretty amazing. And I like the theme and stuff like that. It's like that Renaissance sort of almost sort of swashbuckler type thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does look sweet.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. That was one where I think you tried to convince me to kickstart a few months ago, and I think I was in one of my forget Kickstarter kind of moods, and I didn't do it.
I was trying to get you one of the limited editions, remember?
Yeah. I was trying to get me in because I'd missed it, and then I think there was one, and then I didn't pull the trigger, and now I'm kicking myself. I knew I always have non-buyer's remorse.
Yeah.
So other than Viceroy, anything else you're looking forward to?
That's the big thing.
Well, I will tell you, I'm looking forward to several things. I've already done a bunch of research on, you know, what I'm going to target when I get there and stuff. There is a game called Cthulhu Realms, which is being put out by TMG. Apparently, it's like Star Realms, but with a Cthulhu skin. So I'm really interested in that because, you know, we all love Star Realms. And
Cthulhu.
Yeah, and Cthulhu. So, yeah, so a mashup of those two would be awesome. Apparently, instead of like, you know, damage and hit points and stuff like that, it's sanity, just like the, you know, Lovecraft type thing. And just like Star Realms, you start with five cards. You have initiates, you have goons and followers, I guess, and you use your power or whatever it is to buy from a trade row, and you deck build and boost your sanity, collect power, acquire new cards, you know, reduce the sanity of your opponent, and I guess the most sane one at the end of the game wins. So I'm really looking forward to that game. There's also a really cool game that I'm looking forward to, and you guys know, like, I do love miniatures, but sort of backed off that genre recently just because it's like, you know, well, it's another miniature game that I'm just going to put on my shelf and not play, you know? But there's a game coming out called Mech Deck, which looks really interesting. First of all, I like it because it's a skirmish game, sort of, rather than a actual war, you know, long-winded sort of war game. It can be played pretty quickly within like 30 to 90 minutes. And the way it works is you have a draft. So you draft cards, and those cards correspond to plastic parts. And so you draft five plastic parts, and all those parts then fit together to make a mech for you. And then you use that mech to fight against your opponent on a modular battlefield. And each piece of the mech has different corresponding stats and abilities and stuff like that. And so, you know, each mech that you build every game is going to be different because obviously, you know, your card drafting and you know, probability and chance as to what you're going to get is going to be different. Then there, I guess, there are different action cards that affect the different, you know, the environment and the different pieces of your mech. And I'm really fascinated by that game. And I'm going to definitely check out the booth, hopefully see a demo and see if I like it. And if it's half as cool as it seems from the description, I'm going to pick up a copy.
Sounds pretty intriguing.
It looks cool.
I'm really, really, really looking forward to that. I hope it's at least halfway up to billing. Heroes of Metro City is a game that I really like, and they have come out with an expansion called Sidekicks and Storylines. I'm probably going to pick up a copy of that while I'm there. Let's see, what else am I looking forward to? There are just so many. It's amazing how many things are coming out or just going to be there. I'm going to go definitely check out the guys that created Gothic Doctor. I've had sort of a lot of contact with them. They're going to want to come onto the show at some point, so I'm looking forward to that. I'm going to go drop by and say hi to them. I already have the game, but I definitely want to pick those guys' brains and see what they got coming up in the future. Let's see. The next game that is definitely on my list is a game that's called, Operation Faust. You mentioned that, Chris, already. I love Coup, and so I'm definitely going to want to take a look at that game. Imperial Settlers is coming out with a sequel called Atlanteans. I'm going to take a look at that. I liked Imperial Settlers. It wasn't my favorite game ever. There were things that there were several issues that I sort of had with the game. But if they fix that in the newer game, I may be picking that up as well. And then there are two games that I'm really, I would say, aside from Mech Deck, Cthulhu Realms, that I'm looking forward to. The other two games that I would think would round out my top five are Tides of Time. It is a two-person drafting game. And it's sort of like Star Realms where you fight against each other. It's a two-person game. The art on it is freaking amazing. It's only like $12, $10, something like that. But it's a small deck, self-contained. It's not like a collectible card game or anything like that, but it really, really, really looks amazing. I don't know if you guys have seen that game or the art or whatever for it, but it's like this ancient civilization, that prospers and collapses in time. You build these gigantic monuments, you build fortifications, you amass knowledge. It's amazing. You play like over three rounds, you build your kingdom, you score, while drafting. It looks like sort of like a Euro game, but packed into like a small, like sort of two player PvP game. For $12, how can you go wrong? And last but not least, probably the game I'm actually most looking forward to picking up if I can get my hands on a copy, is Mysterium. Apparently Asmodee is going to have a couple hundred copies on hand. I'm going to try to get there as early as possible, but it looks killer. It's a co-op game. You take the role of a helpful ghost that lives in this like ancient mysterious manor, and the other players in the group are psychics that are invited to the manor by the owner of it to solve the mystery of the ghost and what's going on, and your object is to bring peace to the residents of the manor. I'm big on co-op games, and I'm really big on this whole, like, you know, ghost, mysterious ancient manor theme. So I'm really looking forward to that. And you guys should be looking forward to that too, because if I can get my hands on a copy, we'll definitely be playing that at a future gaming night.
Thematically, it sounds like a reverse Betrayal of House of the Hill.
Exactly. And that's what really draws to me, because Betrayal is one of my, is a really, fun game that I like. I wouldn't say it's one of my favorite games. I was about to say that, but I'm like, no, I can't lie to the listeners. I wouldn't say it's one of my favorite games, but I do really, really like that game. And I do enjoy playing it. Not all the time, but, once every couple months, break it out and play it. I think it's a great game. But that really has me drawn in sort of to take a look at that. And that is sort of my wish list. What do you guys think about, gaming cons in general? Because this, Gen Con is predominantly a board gaming, role-playing gaming con. It's not a scattershot con. It's not like, you're not going to go in there and find, a bunch of Japanese Pocky and crap like that. Well, maybe there will be, some of that. But it's not like a traditional super con or mega con where you go in and it's just like, you can find pretty much anything and everything somewhere. What do you guys think about that in terms of, just the con being like a niche and whether or not that's good or bad and whether or not they can, sustain that model going forward?
I will say I have always enjoyed the niche cons much more than like just kind of a carpet bomb con.
Carpet bomb con. That's awesome. Yeah. We've talked about that before. Some of the animates, some of the smaller cons around here, in South Florida that we like to go to just because they have their niche. They know their audience. They cater to their audience. But, at the end of the day, you're talking about 2, 3, maybe 5,000 people as opposed to 50, 80, 90,000 people,
Well, for me, the feeling of a niche con is more old school. That's how cons used to be.
Right.
Because, there's essentially two types of conventions. One is the volunteer / nonprofit, And then there's the for-profit convention. And all of the media cons you see are for-profit. And Gen Con actually is also for-profit. But, I mean, a lot of back in the day before, you know, when 2,000 to 3,000 people would be, like, a huge turnout for a convention versus mediocre, you know, that was the volunteer cons were kind of what was going on. And everybody had a niche. It was, here's science fiction literature. Here is anime. Here is board games role-playing. And, you know, especially seeing something like Gen Con, it seems like it's only getting stronger, you know, but it's also very deeply tied into the industry. And like I mentioned earlier, the industry sees that, you know, they have to keep Gen Con strong if they want to keep their whole industry going. But, you know, I like that niche. And to some degree, Gen Con is spread out a little bit. I mean, now there's a whole track for writers because, you know, there's a lot of tie-in fiction and a lot of the stuff in board games and role-playing games, they want to kind of tell you a story or give you a short story that sets the mood for the setting that the game's based in. But overall, yeah, I appreciate that. I'm still trying to make it out to Gen Con. Over the years, either when I had the money, I didn't have the time, and when I had the time, I didn't have the money. And I haven't been in that sweet spot yet where I can, you know, I can do both. But I do want to make that pilgrimage. That's pretty much what I consider. That's my little mecca is going to Gen Con as a gamer.
You know, it's always amazing to me, and I go to a lot of cons, but it's amazing to me when I walk into like a million square foot convention hall and just see how big these things are. When I remember years ago going to like the Hollywood Mall for a quote unquote convention, comic book convention or whatever it was. And it was just like 20 or 30 little tables set up in the middle of the mall with, you know, the local comic shop or, you know, owners or books, you know, bookstore owners or board game, you know, store owners just sitting there with a folding table and like, you know, some of their wares just sitting there now compared to, you know, obviously these huge carpet bomb cons and, you know, scattershot cons. I'm just amazed at the growth and the sustained growth. I mean, over the last, what, 5, 10, 15 years that these cons have just blown up. I mean, it's amazing. And like you said, Chris, I like that Gen Con has added things to their, you know, the writer's track and the different other offerings that they have in terms of different things that everyone can do there. But I also like that they've sort of tried to stay true to themselves in terms of what they do offer. I mean, you're not going to see a big hall of furry animal, you know, stuffed animals and, you know, different things like that. It's very much still geared to board gaming, you know, tabletop gaming, role-playing gaming. They have added some electronic gaming stuff, but it's pretty much, you know, that's the core. You know, they have their, of course, historical miniature gaming, hobby, you know, hobby events and you know, different seminars and LARPs and things like that. But everything that they have still fits sort of within the genre of just gaming as opposed to, you know, well, go over here and go buy some Japanese cola or go over there and you can buy a comic book poster or, you know, something like that.
Or a massage pillow.
Yeah. Or get a tattoo or, you know, it's crazy that, you know,
cyber
some of the things you
waterfalls.
See. Yeah, it's crazy some of the things you see at these cons, but you know, also amazing. I mean, you know, a lot of these things that you see at these scattershot cons, you might not see otherwise, especially in the artist alley and stuff like that. So I can't bag on them too much, but I do like what, you know, that Gen Con is sort of staying true to itself.
I almost wish different conventions would do that instead of having, you know, this generic con and that generic con and this generic con. Like, look, you guys get sci-fi, you guys get comic books, you guys get anime. And, I mean, I'll still go to all three, no problem.
Right.
I think I just enjoy all three a little bit more.
So you are promoting, I was going to say antitrust, but you're promoting trust. Trust building between the con organizers. I can see how that might be an issue once prices skyrocket, but hey, yeah. You know, you never know. It might be good. You know, the offerings might be better. All right. With all that being said, hopefully we will not be living in a monopolized con future. I am sure that the government will protect us from that because they're so good at protecting us from everything else big business does. I think that about rounds out the show. Anything else you guys want to talk about regarding Gen Con or gaming or anything else?
I think I'm all wrapped up.
Be sure to search eBay for Nerdstravaganza's Gen Con exclusive sale.
Swag.
Yeah, exactly.
For exclusive Nerdstravaganza acquired swag.
Exactly. We'll just slap a sticker on it and, you know, jump the price by $20. Well, with all that being said, I think we'll stick a sticker on this episode and call it done. Dear listeners, we definitely want to remind you to check us out on iTunes. Why don't you take the time, if you really like the show, to leave us a favorable comment, give us maximum stars, and you can be entered into our memorabilia sweepstakes where we have a ton of Star Trek and Doctor Who memorabilia to give away just for doing that. All you got to do, give us 5 stars, leave us a nice rating or a nice review, and make sure to include your Twitter handle, Instagram handle, or any other social media or email you want to use and so we can get back to you if you have won a amazing piece of memorabilia that we have for our listeners. Or you can check us out on Stitcher if streaming is your thing, or on any other podcatching software that you prefer.
Like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter and Instagram, add us to your Google circle, and don't forget to join the Nerdstravaganza HQ group on Facebook.
You can also get bonus points in your game of life by checking us out at nerdstravaganza.com. Search for Nerdstravaganza in YouTube to check out our board game reviews and videos, or leave us an email at nerdstravaganza@gmail.com.
Thank you, gentlemen, and dear listeners, I hope that I did a decent job filling in for our fearless leader, Tom, who we will have back next week. With that being said, I will bid you all adieu. Chris, take it away.
Critical success! Critical success!
Except for the one that fell off the table.
Yeah. That's clearly a re-roll.
Yeah, yeah. Do that over again. That was awesome.
God damn it.